When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning. It is time to get up with a Charles Dickens night. The best of times in Boston, the worst for Luka in OKC. We'll tell you why he's in bigger trouble than you think. Meanwhile, the two-minute report tells us we were right and we were dead wrong. The very latest from New York ahead of game two. Plus, the league weighs in. Did they get it right? Or did Mr. Murray deserve much more than what was dished out? Those are the questions. Here come the answers. It's time to get up, starting right now here on ESPN. Fired up we are, and obviously the league announcing huge things yesterday. We will get to all of that with McNutt and Windy and Legs and Alan Hahn. It's all on the way, but let's start with an interesting night in the NBA, though not a super competitive one. Here we go, Cavs and Celtics game one in Boston. It's Donovan Mitchell, it's Jason Tatum. This, Legs, is the very first bucket of the game, Jaylen Brown setting the tone.
Absolutely, and look, they're really, really good when on certain nights you don't know who's one and 1A. Tatum or Brown, this was one of those nights.
Brown had 15 in the first quarter. Derek White for three. Boston would score 40 in the first. Second quarter, Tatum getting it done, Monica, against Max Strus.
So much has been made about his shooting as of late, but I just think he's a guy that has to continue to get into rhythm. That one looks good.
This game didn't feel in doubt, but the score was never really completely gone. Oh, look at Jaylen Brown taking it strong. Boston by 13 in the third, and then it's White. He has been sensational this year.
This is silly, man. He's going behind his back, step back threes, and even he's got a look on his face like, man, I don't even know what's going on right now.
Cavs down 15. Donovan Mitchell keeping them in it best he can. As he knocks that down, he would score 33. It's a 12-point game. Now we got 10 seconds to go in the third. Mitchell for three. It's no good. Here comes Peyton Pritchard. And I'll ask you this. Why would I show it to you if it didn't go in? Celtics by 15 after three. Fourth quarter, 4 minutes to go. Boston has pulled away. Tatum plus the foul. He had 18 points, 11 rebounds. Brown had 32. White had 25 with 7 threes. And the Celtics Cruz, no one is blowing teams out like the Celtics. Take a look at this. This was their 19th win by 25 or more points this year. That breaks a tie for the most such wins in NBA history in the regular season and playoffs combined, and one gets a sense there will be more of those to come. Meanwhile, the nightcap. We were looking forward to Luka and the Mavs taking on SGA in OKC for game one. Here we're going to pick it up, and maybe this is the moment that everything turns. You're going to see Doncic go down here, Legs, and he looks hurt.
Yeah, he got up slow. He limped pretty much the rest of the game. It was noticeable. Didn't have lift and lost his aggressiveness after that.
6 minutes to go in the third as he stays in the game, but Lu Dort is a problem for him, and he shows you a little bit of why, and it leads to offense, and here's Jalen Williams in the Thunder open a lead.
Yeah, pressure Luka at half court. Ball goes off his leg, beats him to the loose ball, creates early offense in transition.
But here's Luka, 1 of 8. From three, 5 turnovers, 19 points. Really tough night for him. And then it's SGA, acrobatic in the lane.
Put on a show, had a lot of help. This was very impressive offensive performance out of Oklahoma City the second half. The ball movement and the timely shooting.
And Monica, look at Jalen Williams. He had a good night last night with 18.
I just love this young team. They play with so much energy. They got a bunch of guys involved. SGA flirted with a triple-double.
He had 29, 9, and 9. Jalen had 18, and the Thunder win easily. But the storyline here is Luka. Last night, just the third time in his playoff career that he scored fewer than 20. In fact, going into last night's game, he had scored 20 or more points in 24 straight games. So this morning, Monica and I are over in makeup because, you know, that's what we'll do. And then I can hear from the green room, you two guys in there, you're very concerned about Luka.
Absolutely. Listen, the reason I thought Dallas could win this series, it completely hinges on Luka Doncic. And he looks cooked. He looks cooked. He's got no lift. His three-point shot, which is, I think, for the most part, he doesn't take contested shots because of his size, his lean back, his ability to get separation. These aren't really contested shots. He's got no lift. All of these shots are hitting front rim. And if he's not making perimeter shots at a high rate, Dallas is cooked in this series. They're not going to have enough. So I'm very concerned. And his body language when he came out of the game, just he looked like he was very dispirited by what's going on and what he is feeling. Bad sign for the Mavericks.
Yeah, it's as if he already knows. So he came into this series with a knee sprain. He was going to try to play through it. Knee sprains aren't going to heal while you're playing, right? And so you have that combined with Lou Dort. He had 5 turnovers, 4 of them when Dort was guarding him. So that combination is lethal for the Dallas Mavericks in this series. They're going to need a lot more out of Kyrie Irving.
His step back is one of the biggest weapons in the league. He's 5 of 35 on threes the last 4 games. He pushes off the right foot to go into it. He doesn't trust the right foot right now. And he has said he doesn't think he'll be right until the offseason. Yep. Doesn't bode well.
And by the way, Monica, I'm just getting a call. This is from my friends in Oklahoma City saying, can someone say something about us? Haven't lost a
You don't have any friends in Oklahoma City.
Listen,
don't worry.
And whatever we don't say, they will say as a team in all of their post-game interviews that they do together. Look, this is a group that takes a lot of pride in what they do defensively. They play together. They play fast. They are not going to make any excuses for Luka. And I think Lou Dort is uniquely poised to make his life difficult, even if he was healthy. So you throw that ankle in there, it's looking real good for the Thunder.
All right, so OKC, they're the one seed for a reason, and they're up 1-0. So that was last night. Then let's back up just a few hours, and the punishment came in for Jamal Murray for the Monday night meltdown. And some of us believe it is a slap on the wrist. He was fined $100,000, but avoided a suspension after throwing a towel and then a heating pad in the direction of an official during Denver's Game 2 loss to the Timberwolves. And lest you've been perhaps, I don't know, off the planet for the last 24 hours and didn't know, the second thing he threw right there went out onto the court. So A, he threw it at an official. B, it went out on the court where someone could easily have gotten seriously injured. We talked about this so much yesterday. $100,000 fine, but no suspension. Immediately, what's your reaction?
Very surprised, and I said it yesterday. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. I'm grateful that he's not. I hate when guys get suspended because I want to see both teams, for the most part, at full strength. But the recklessness, that was the word you used yesterday, Greeny. I thought it was the perfect word. It's a reckless act. And the fact that nobody was hurt shouldn't really matter, I don't think, in making a decision like this. Again, I'm glad he's going to be there on Friday night. Very surprised, because this could have ended up horribly if somebody stepped on that, slid out, hurt their groin, rolled an ankle, even if it limited them in any way. And because of Jamal Murray's act sitting on the end of the bench, I'm surprised they didn't have a bigger deterrence.
I'll take it a step further. Dangerous act. Dangerous. Throwing out something onto the playing surface where the players are actually playing, right? But first of all, it takes a lot to get suspended in the NBA these days, clearly, number one. Number two, I believe from people I've talked to that if there was an injury, eye for an eye probably would have happened here. But it didn't, so an injury didn't happen. Six-figure fine is still pretty significant for regular people like me who see a number like that and go, damn, that's a lot of money. And so I think that's the shock value the league wanted to get with the fan base when it comes to, all right, we fine this guy a whole lot of money and we're letting him know this can't ever happen. But when you think about it, I didn't think I was going to wake up today and realize that Draymond Green and the league agree on player punishment. Yes. I never thought I would ever see that day. But apparently,
for those
agree.
Of you who didn't see it, and we showed it yesterday, Draymond did not believe there should have been a suspension. And in the end, he was right. And again, the shock value of the money is what it is. $100,000 based on the collective bargaining agreement is an enormous fine. It is, however, worth pointing out that it is also about what Jamal Murray makes for every quarter of every game that he plays during the regular season. It's 24% of his per-game salary. So, essentially, once he plays the first quarter of the first game of next season, he will have made back the $100,000 that he just lost. Now, again, I'm not suggesting that why were they going to fine him, $20 million? I mean, I understand. There is no fine that they could levy in this circumstance, which is one of the many reasons that I actually really thought a suspension was coming. Monica.
So for me, and you guys know we're part of the Knicks broadcast, when Joel Embiid didn't get suspended grabbing Mitchell Robinson by the knee out of the air in the Philadelphia Knicks series, I'm like, okay, say it any louder that money matters and that we need our stars on the floor. And so we're going to give a little wiggle room. So I was not surprised that he wasn't suspended. Obviously, we've heard Adam Silver talk a lot about the product, whether we were talking about the play-in tournament what was the one LeBron and
the in-season tournament.
The in-season tournament. There you go, the IST. So it matters, this working relationship of the product, particularly in a year when we're discussing the rights moving forward. So I can't say that I was surprised. I do find it interesting that the officials are just out there with no support?
It's a tough week for the refs.
All right. I saved you purposely for last, Wendy, because once you give all your information, it might change a lot of perspective. I wanted everyone's first gut reaction. Now, what can you tell us?
Okay, so I searched for a precedent on this because we said yesterday when I hadn't seen it. The only thing I could find was something that happened last year in Miami. Dwayne Dedman, a backup big man, hits a rack and a massage gun comes out on the court, okay? Not good, somewhat comparable. A big, heavy object somebody could have stepped on here. He was immediately ejected from the game, and then he was, in fact, suspended for the next game. Asterix. He was not suspended by the NBA. He was suspended by the Miami Heat because he was angry at Eric Spoelstra for taking him out of the game or something he said to him. So, yeah, I went back and read the stories. They said the Heat said they consulted with the league. So they sort of wiggled out of there. What I'm kind of surprised about is Jamal Murray was kind of guilty of two things. One, throwing something on the court. Two, throwing something at the referee. And as you said, the league not having the back of the official here, who got thrown at twice, one of their top officials, who will be in New York tonight to do the Knicks game, because he's one of the top officials, they give him as many games as possible, literally not having his back, is what the only surprise here, because it was two offenses.
Look, and it was back-to-back offenses as well. To me, there was no defense here. We're talking about the offenses, there was no defense. You can't say it was just one moment where he lost his cool because he threw a towel and then he threw the heating pad. I understand what you're saying. Sometimes we adjudicate the result, okay? If you are, I'm just going to use a terrible analogy. I'm not in any way comparing the acts. But if you were drunk driving, that's a penalty. If you're drunk driving and you kill someone, it's a greater penalty. So I get it. If you throw a thing on the court and someone gets hurt, then it's a greater penalty. If they don't, we adjudicate the result. I understand that part of it. But the recklessness and dangerous level of it, I think, are significant. The no defense of the referee, I think, is remarkable. And I guess I would just ask the question, what do you have to do to get suspended from a playoff game in these days? They've shown now Joel Embiid can literally grab a player in midair and yank him to the ground. And listen.
Suspended? He wasn't even ejected.
That's
nothing
what I mean.
Happened in that.
Neither was Jamal Murray. I mean, Jamal Murray wasn't ejected. He will not wind up missing 1 second of playing time.
I can't blame the referee. Didn't see it.
I get it, but everyone else did. We have technology now.
We all
phones.
Know where that came from.
Someone call Mark and say, "Hey, Mark Heath, this guy just threw two things."
Well, never mind that.
While
there's no vendors selling heat packs in the building.
That's right.
Like, there's only one possible place a heat pack could come from.
You know.
And I'm surprised you don't look at the bench and go, "Well, it clearly didn't come from that bench." Technical foul.
At least you can't have a trial in the middle of a quarter.
Right. And what I will say, to Wendy's point in terms of the two examples, you had the players being like, "Oh, look, what's happening?" That with the Dedman example, they're like, "Oh, this massage gun is on this floor." And so everybody sees it. For whatever reason, in real time, it's to the referee's back, and credit Jamal Murray's teammates because they got that thing out of there as swiftly as they thought they could.
Listen, the other piece of it, just to the example you use is a good one. But he didn't mean to do it. Dedman smashes a rack in frustration and the thing goes out on the court. I get that. That's one thing. This was totally premeditated and totally on purpose.
The only thing I want to say is, look, let's get back to the Embiid play, too. And I thought he should have been suspended for that. It was a dirty play. It was a dangerous play. Here's the only thing. At least in that situation, like, you're on the court, you interacted with another player.
Right.
That happens all the time, right? Guys get into it, you're engaged with another player, and something happens, you lose your cool, and you could lead to a suspension. This is a guy sitting on the end of the bench, injecting himself into the action when he's not even out on the court. This has nothing to do with another player, and yet he did something that potentially could have led to an injury to one of his own teammates, or even worse, somebody on Minnesota's that could have altered the series. If Karl Anthony Towns steps on that and he goes out for a couple of games, you potentially could have changed the outcome of the series. The fact that it didn't, I didn't think should matter.
You could have changed the outcome of the series, of the entire NBA playoffs.
Yes.
And you could have altered the course of his career if he suffers a serious injury or anybody else does. So look, it's no secret. I believe that a suspension was definitively warranted. I do understand that they're trying as hard as they can not to, because they want their product to be as good as they can, and so would I if I were in their shoes. A caller to my radio show brought up something that happened a generation ago. Gather around, boys and girls. I'm going to tell you a story. I don't know if this would have been a better solution, but it might have been something they could have considered. In 1996, a baseball player named Roberto Alomar, who is now in the Hall of Fame, spit in the face of an umpire named John Hirschbeck. This happened right at the end of the regular season. If you're easily ooked out, don't watch, because he spits right in his face and it's really gross. But anyway, this happens right at the end of the year. You saw it right there. This is obviously something for which a person deserves to be suspended, right? This happened right at the end of the regular season. His team was on its way to the playoffs. What they decided to do was they suspended him for the first 5 games of the following season. Now, the with pay down there, let's take that out of the equation because that seems like a vacation. But let's say for the sake of discussion, you can decide that these games are so important to us, the product is so important that we put on the floor, that suspending Jamal Murray right now is harmful to the entire league in a way that is beyond just punishing him. So we're going to enact a suspension of whatever you want, 1 game, 2 games, 3 games, whatever you want, applicable at the beginning of next season. Would that have been, I never thought, a caller to my radio show brought this up yesterday. On first blush, what do you think?
I kind of like the sound of that, to be honest with you, because you're right. We just played a 6-month regular season to get to this point, right? And this is what everybody wants to see. The league wants to see it. We all want to see it. Fans want to see it. Their teams need these guys out there for these particular games, but at least you're addressing the nature of the seriousness of what he did in a more significant way than writing a check that he's not even going to miss.
And you used the word yesterday, a precedent. What has now been set as precedent is you can throw things at the official. He threw 2 things at a referee. One of them can go out on the court where it could potentially really hurt someone. And the precedent that has now been set, Wendy, is that this is not a suspensionable act.
Counterpoint. As an 18-year-old Cleveland Indians fan in 1997 who played the Baltimore Orioles in the first round of the playoffs,
right.
I was pissed that he played and the Orioles beat the Indians in 4 games.
Yep.
And I thought the suspension should have been right there. Forget that they signed Alomar the next year. But if you were a fan of the Timberwolves and he got suspended for next season, you'd be screaming.
Oh, they're
like,
screaming.
What is
they're
this?
Screaming now. Trust me. They're screaming right now.
Greeny, I appreciate your eloquent setup of that one. But to me, penalizing somebody a season later is as dumb as the last 2-minute report. Like, that is nothing. Like, if anything, and I know you brought up the CBA, if anything, it's a game check at least in terms of the financial penalty. Because you're right. You look at the numbers. $100K is not something that Jamal Murray.
A game check would be 4 times what they suspended him.
So at
what
least,
they fined
you know
him
what I mean?
Yesterday.
Like, at least give me something that I think he might feel.
Well, that would be that, I guess.
What is he going to feel? Impact on his team.
That's the one thing.
I mean, look, the money part of it for player, you pointed that out. It's a quarter of a game for him, right? So in real life, the money thing doesn't hurt nearly as much. What hurts is when I do something that costs my team. It didn't cost a technical foul. It didn't cost you getting ejected from that game. But to me, that's the way you really can impact the player. That's what David Stern always believed in.
Yeah.
Is that I could fine you, but that's just you personally. When you do something that is so egregious or goes against rules that we created, Patrick Ewing walked to center court, suspended for a playoff game, turned the whole series around when there was a fight that he wasn't even involved in.
Right.
But that's the kind of thing that sends the message to the whole league that see what happens, you hurt your team when you do something like this. That message could have been sent here. It wasn't.
That was, and to your point, that happened in a series with Phoenix as well when Steve Nash got hip-checked into
Amari Stoudemire.
And all the rest of that. And David Stern came on all the, listen, and if you disagreed with him, he would come on your radio show and he would yell at you. Trust me, I've been there. But I want to give the – look, it's very easy for me and us sitting up here where our responsibility is just to entertain our audience to say he should have been suspended. If you're sitting in the seat that the commissioner is sitting in, you're weighing a lot of things. I fully appreciate that. And one of them is, I need a good show on Friday. I need fans to watch these games. So I think there is something to be said for still attaching a suspension to this act. I understand it's not perfect, and I understand people will be mad. But if you're in Minnesota, you're mad today anyway. He didn't get suspended either way. So my point is, that feels to me like it could have been at least a way of saying this was beyond the pale. This was something that does not happen in a basketball
game. If I could, real quick, your idea works for one reason, is because if he suspended opening night, guess what? We're reminded of why he's not playing.
Yeah.
He has to be reminded of it again. You see the video again. He's embarrassed one more time for that act.
Let me ask one more thing.
Yeah.
So, Legs, yesterday was a travel day. One of the unique natures of or circumstances of this thing is that that game was played on a Monday, and there's no other game until Friday because that series got so far ahead of the other series in the West. So we haven't heard from either side yet. We haven't heard from Jamal Murray. We haven't heard from the Timberwolves players. How do you think they're going to react? How would you feel If you're Karl Anthony Towns or one of those guys on Minnesota and you were out there on the floor and you yesterday see that pop up on Twitter, that no suspension.
The way that they're playing right now, the last thing you're going to do is act like this is going to matter to you at all.
Gotcha.
It's business as usual. Good. I'm glad they're at full strength. Watch now. Watch what's going to happen on Friday. And by the way, Jamal Murray now, he dodged this bullet. The way he's played, the way he got suffocated the other night, he better have a big response for his team on Friday night.
You know who's going to have a big response? The fans in Minnesota.
Yes, I was just going to say. He's going to hear it.
A big response. Super quick. Does that series look over to you? I mean, can Denver still come back?
I'm not ready to call it over. I think Denver is still special. I think they've got better basketball to be played, but I do like the T-Wolves.
Okay. And again, my thanks to Nick in New York, who called in with that idea on my radio show yesterday. It wasn't bad, all things considered, and it was received here better than I expected. As we continue, the two-minute report tells us that we were both right and dead wrong. We've got the latest from New York coming up ahead of the huge game two tonight. And speaking of the Knicks, sneaky big and very bad news for New York. We'll tell you why there's going to be even more pressure on Jalen Brunson to carry the load. That's coming up. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meet nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Get Up is brought to you by Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters on Friday. All right, wake up call, Rangers, Hurricanes, double overtime. Sean McDonough.
Ran into Zibanejad. Kreider wound up with it. Panarin's shot blocked by Slavin. Follow up is free. They score! Vincent Trocheck wins it in overtime for New York.
The game winner, and the reason everyone on our staff is exhausted this morning, because they all were up all night watching that. Second round continues tonight. Doubleheader on ESPN, Bruins Panthers, 7:30 Eastern, followed by Oilers and Canucks. Coverage starts with the point, 6 Eastern on ESPN2. Coming up, the last two-minute report is out from Pacers Knicks. Turns out they were right, and we were right, too. You'll hear exactly what that means as we continue next. Get up on ESPN.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Back on Get Up, bottom of the hour. Another wake-up call, another overtime game winner, Mike Monaco.
There in behind, and Cagliano zooms it ahead. Wood with speed. Wood drives in. Backhand. Score! Miles Wood, the hero in overtime.
Unbelievable night in the NHL. The Avs trailed in that game 3-0 in the first period, came all the way back. It's Colorado's third postseason comeback of three goals or more in franchise history. Their first since 1997. So it was a great night in the NHL. Again, the games in the NBA, if you're just joining us, not quite as compelling. Let's run the floor here. Legs, bad night for Dallas. How concerned are we about Luka Doncic and struggle shooting the ball?
Extremely. He just does not have the lift to get in. Did he step back threes? They're not even close, some of these shots. And this is a critical element of their offense because he can get the shot whenever he wants. He just does not look right. I didn't think his energy was very good last night, probably because mentally it's draining dealing with something like that. But you can see just shot after shot from the perimeter, not close.
Monica, Boston, a blowout of Cleveland in game one. Will we need brooms for this series?
I'm not going to go brooms just because we've seen the Celtics kind of take their foot off the gas at points. I will go gentleman sweep, I think, in this one. The Celtics just have too many weapons. You can look at their shooting percentage last night, 50% practically from the field, almost 40% from three, but the rebounding was 55-38. Like, without Jared Allen for the Cavs, it doesn't feel great.
And then, Wendy, everyone was eagerly anticipating everyone's favorite thing, the two-minute report from the Knicks and Pacers. What has been the reaction? I guess I should go through all the things that were in it here for those who didn't see it. In fact, let's do that, Cindy. Let me go through what was in it, and then we'll let Wendy tell us what they thought. This found a few key things. With 53 seconds left, the refs missed an offensive foul on Dante DiVincenzo, who failed to disengage with Aaron Nesmith, so that we talked about that. A second later, the kickball, which wasn't happened. It was an incorrect call, as we all knew also. Then with 10 seconds left before the refs correctly called a moving screen on Miles Turner, he committed another on a screen he set on Dante DiVincenzo. So those were the things that came out in the two-minute report of most interest. Wendy, again, you're covering the series for us day in, day out. What can you tell us?
Right. There was rulings on two DiVincenzo screens, and it's not going to make the Pacers happy because this was ruled, in fact, a correct call. This was ruled as a missed call. So the Pacers got the wrong end of both of them, both involving DiVincenzo. And then, of course, this play, two missed calls right there against the Pacers. In both cases, the Pacers should have had the ball on the possession that broke the tie with the three-pointer. Very hard to swallow, but frankly, not surprising based on the way the officials reacted after the game and the replay center reacted during the game.
We talked at great length
about this yesterday. Again, the two-minute report is what it is. Some people don't like it. I fully understand why they do it and appreciate the transparency. But putting that aside, what's your reaction to what they told us yesterday?
You know how I feel about the two-minute report.
I
can't stand it. Because it doesn't affect the outcome in any way. It doesn't make anybody feel better. It just enrages fan bases even more. I said to you yesterday, based on that last screen, which you know how I felt about that. And again, I want to be clear about something. I'm not one of those people that says, oh, well, the time is scored in the game. You can't call that. That's not my approach at all. I agree. It should be called consistently throughout the game. Here's the problem. It's not. A minute earlier, you saw the screen by DiVincenzo that was not called. That was my big point. If you're not calling that, how in the world are you calling this? And that was my biggest problem. Not the fact that it was a game deciding potentially possession. It's the consistency within the game.
Right here.
Yeah, and here's the thing about that. Here's what trips me out about that. They're saying the reason that was a missed call was because he clamped his arm. So the two arm, right there, the two arms coming up into his shoulders with full extension and like almost a body slam, that's fine. But the clamping of the arm, that's where you went too far, Dante. I don't even understand that part of it. At least that was in a two-minute report. I would have lost my mind if that wasn't acknowledged. But at least it was. But this doesn't pacify Pacers fans in any way.
No.
It doesn't help Rick Carlisle. It doesn't help them. You know, they know they didn't get that last shot off to potentially win the game.
Okay. Why are you looking at me like that, McNutt? What?
In theory, I 100% agree with Legs. Consistency is anything that players and coaches ask for, right? And in real time, when that call went down on the radio with my partner, Pat O'Keefe, I was like, and this is on a Knicks broadcast. That is a tough call. It immediately took me back to the Women's Final Four, UConn and Iowa.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see that made. But I do think that officiating is just such a difficult job. And I know it's tough for us to appreciate that when you just want them to get it right. And then I will say that throughout the season, we've seen these calls bounce whichever way. Sometimes, I won't say it's fair, but I do understand the idea that you end up chalking this up to home court. It's loud, it's busy, and the bounce goes in favor of the home team.
I went to the Pacers practice here in New York yesterday, and they went even on a higher road, not talking about it again. And Tyrese Halliburton, who just played a terrible game, actually took the blame for that, the angle on the screen, saying that it was partially his fault that he was too far away from Turner and that he led to that moving screen, to which I said,
wow.
No, that is, I'm going to take that away from you.
Kill him with kindness, Wendy. Kill him with kindness.
They're kissing up to the rest
of
the game.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what they're doing. So yesterday, Alan, you had on your radio show Steve Javy, longtime NBA official. And I'll play you a little bit of the sound here because there are many of us who believe, Legs just said he doesn't, but I did. I was one of the pundits yesterday who said in that situation, on the final possession of a one-point playoff game, I don't want the whistle blown there. Steve Javy addressed that yesterday.
For a different era of officiating in which the owners want the letter of the law called, whether it be the first quarter or fourth quarter. And unfortunately, when you hear these pundits saying, well, the situation didn't warrant it and so on and so forth, when these referees go to Secaucus to review this as a challenge, they're not saying, hey, guys, this situation is this situation is that. Even though technically it's a foul, let's not call it because we want the players to, you know, to win the game, per se, as they say there.
All right, so again, that was from your show with Bartholomew on the radio yesterday in New York. Give us the context of the context of that conversation.
Yeah, well, the question I asked was exactly what you were talking about, Legs. I just said, you know, when you were an official, do you have that in your head? You don't make that call at this moment of the game, the idea of letting the players decide the game, which is what Miles Turner said afterwards. And that's when he gave that answer, is that he said, I got to go to today. Because back then, yes. But today it's different. He mentioned the owners. This is what they want. He said it is a new age, that the owners are very much involved, that they said this. He actually went on when I followed up about that, about the letter of the law and how owners are involved. And he said, when you consider the gambling aspect, analytics as well, this is what they want. They want to make sure there is that consistency. I know you're saying there wasn't, but DiVincenzo was called for a screen foul a little bit earlier there. In the possession. But the last thing he said was that there's a lot of things that go into the change of the environment of officiating nowadays in all the sports. And he's talked to officials in other sports, and they are all in agreement that that has become a new thing now, is you don't call that at that moment of the game, because why is it different? Every single minute of a game is supposed to be equal, and that includes the final minute of a game.
So what, Mike, are you buying that? I mean, I fully buy that he's telling us that.
And, yeah. And he said that long ago, that wasn't the case.
Absolutely.
He's saying today it is. That's because the owners want it that way.
unfortunately might be a strong word, but unfortunately I do buy it, in fact, because of gambling, like on a, in a very real way in terms of that, how that is changing how we consume sport.
But the consistency of it, again, I don't want to belabor this.
Yeah.
But I'm going to anyway.
Yeah.
So yesterday, Hembo, tell me if I'm getting these numbers right. He told me on the radio yesterday there were 96 screens set in that game that night, and two of them were called illegal. So you're going to tell me that so in that moment, that was one of the two illegal screens that
were called about a 3 minutes
out of 96?
That is my point.
That's what I'm saying.
I wish I had more time because I'd love to sit here for an hour and show every screen. Every screen in the game, let's watch them all. And tell me how many look like Miles Turner's. 30, 40 look just like that. And it's fine. Here's why it's such a problem with it. For me, for an official
to make
that
call. Sorry, it was 142.
Call,
just to be clear, I greatly understated it.
Yeah, I was
going
to say.
There were 142 screens. I'm sorry, I just was trying to remember the number off the top of my head. 142 screens set in that game. Two of them were called illegal.
You said that number to me, teeing me up, and I didn't know what the number was, but I was thinking in a game there's 175 to 200 different times you change ends of the floor. I thought it was going to be like 150.
Let's not belabor me getting it wrong.
You were way off.
Okay. Let's go back to the point.
No, but here's, the L2M on the
show. I wish, here's the thing, what I'm saying is, to call that in that spot, that official, you almost have to be just so intently looking at that for any sort of movement on that screen that you're going to make that call. Or what they're saying, oh, he didn't have enough time to see it. You have to be so anticipating that in that moment to blow that whistle. And that's the part I don't get. But you clearly saw the DiVincenzo screen 40 seconds earlier, and you had to, at the same time, in your own head, thinking, okay, no harm, no foul here. So in that one, the anticipation of that contact to blow your whistle in that spot, that's where I have a
problem
with
it. There's a human element. There's a human element. And you know what happens there during a timeout? Hey, by the way, Miles Turner, he's moving on that screen. Like, he's leaning.
That's a good point, too.
Now
that's
it's in his head. And here comes Turner. Oh, you know what? Let me see if he is moving. Oh, yeah, he did move. Blow the whistle.
There had to be 40 screens at least set.
You know that
game
goes on.
That were more significant than Miles Turner's.
Assistant
that's
coaches work the officials during timeouts while the head coach is dealing with the players. I mean, that stuff happens all the time. Sometimes veteran players during a timeout will do that. But that's your human element part. But the other part about the arena thing, see, that's where there's not just the officials on the court. There's the alternate who's out in the locker room. There's also, in Secaucus, there is the replay official for the night. They all have to be in agreement. And there's one guy who's not even in the building, so he's not involved in the momentum and the crowd and all that stuff. He's part of the decision.
And let's be clear about this. Once it goes to Secaucus, I have no trouble with them not overturning it.
Yeah.
Was all that person is deciding is it a foul or is it not?
Right.
He's not deciding that we've not called it 140 other times tonight and all of that. The point is the whistle has to be blown in the first place to initiate that, right? If the whistle is never blown,
right,
no one says a word, and Tibbs is chewing out DiVincenzo last night for flopping in that situation and giving up a wide open shot.
Very true. You got to fight through that, whatever the case may be. But again, like, I'm with Han. You kind of get to a place where this is the human element of sport. It's funny you mentioned talking to the official because I'm thinking back through the game. And cooler heads prevailed in terms of the Knicks, but there was constantly a dialogue with the officials in terms of what was and was not happening on the floor. I'm sure we'll probably get one in Indiana. That
I'll make
Knicks
this very, final word. Very easy and very short. Steve Javy wouldn't have blown the whistle there.
Would not have blown the whistle there. Oh,
he
totally
said it himself.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Himself.
Also, Miles Turner wouldn't have set that screen if 12 of those were called earlier in the game. He would have been significantly more careful about that contact.
That might be the best stat of the game.
All right, it's one thing I did.
142, 140 clean screens.
Right, and two of them that were not good. Okay, I didn't even get to the bad news for the. So that was all good news for the Knicks. There's sneaky bad news for the Knicks, and I'm going to get to that coming up next. Plus, we will also get to our buddy Big Perk, who had things to say about LeBron. He thinks it's time for the King to hand in his crown. Has Perk lost his mind? We'll answer that question next. Come on, get up.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The way that she meets the moment is unreal.
Rocket stardom.
She's a generational player.
Can't help but watch when she plays.
She's the show.
With the first pick,
the Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark.
And we'll have her first regular season game coming up next Tuesday. Meanwhile, as I promised you, sneaky big news from New York, and it's not good. Backup center Mitchell Robinson is likely out for the rest of the playoffs. He has a stress injury to his left ankle. He played just 12 minutes in game one. He had surgery on that ankle in December, missed 50 games. He sprained that same ankle in game three against the 76ers. I'll remind everyone who doesn't know that Alan and Monica are both part of the broadcast of New York Knicks basketball here in New York. So you know that team better than anybody. They are incredibly the opposite of deep, shallow. I mean, as it is, they only got 3 points off their bench. How would you describe the significance of this loss?
Don't love it. Mitchell Robinson did a great job in spots defending Joel Embiid in the previous series. But I will say in game five in Philly, when Robinson was unavailable and Hartenstein got in foul trouble, Precious Achiuwa was deployed. And he had a tremendous fourth quarter performance, particularly defensively. And so I do think that his skill set matches up with what the Indiana Pacers are looking to do.
Yeah, but this is like the Black Knight and Monty Python. I mean, how many body parts can a team lose before they finally have nothing left to fight with? So they're even more shallow at the center position, though they do have that depth. But this takes me back again, as we were talking about Jamal Murray and suspensions and eye for an eye. If someone got hurt, he would have been. Joel Embiid, this all started with that play where Embiid grabs his legs. Mitchell Robinson was up in the air. He grabs his legs and yanks him down, and you see, like, he had the left ankle surgically repaired, and he's landing hard on both sides. He twists the right one. He lands hard on the left one. Then shortly after this, Embiid's driving at him, falls on him, lands on that ankle again. Mitchell Robinson left that game at halftime, did not return, and from that point forward, he looked like somebody that was having a hard time getting up down the floor. Game one, he could barely move, and so you go back to that moment and you say, well, did he injure the player? It led to an injury. It led to a team losing a key significant player. And that's why, again, when we made a big deal about that Embiid play and why that should have been a flagrant two, that was looked like he was injuring another player on a careless, reckless play. It didn't happen.
That was the game Embiid had 50 points, by the way. Again, you're covering the series. You were out of practice yesterday. What's the one most important thing you can tell us leading into game two tonight?
Tyrese Halliburton spoke to us for 7 minutes yesterday and 13 times said he will be better tonight. 6 shots, 6 points. Halliburton doesn't get better. The Pacers are probably going to be 2-0 down.
Legs, we will all be here tomorrow morning reacting to this game. What are we going to say was the difference? What will decide game two tonight?
Well, Halliburton obviously has to be much better. It goes without saying. He was a no-show in game one. No aggressiveness whatsoever. But the other thing is, what are they going to do strategy-wise against Jalen Brunson? Nembhard is not the answer. You can play him on him some. He's got great lateral quickness. He was overwhelmed physically with Brunson getting to his spots, bumping him, leaning back. He's not big enough to contest the shot. I think Nesmith will be on him more. And I also think selectively try to get it out of his hands and deny him back as much as you can and see if DiVincenzo and Hart and other guys can go make a play off the dribble. Brunson was too comfortable, particularly in the fourth quarter of that game, operating against Nembhard in a lot of one-on-one coverages. I think that has to change, or Brunson's going to get 35 or 40 every game in this series.
All right, so we'll see where that all goes again. Tonight, game two at the Garden, 8 o'clock tip-off. And Monica and Alan will be there for the coverage, and Wendy will be there and all that kind of stuff. And we'll have full coverage of it tomorrow morning, of course. One other thing I want to get in this hour. In L.A., the scrutiny continues after the Lakers saw their season come to an end against Denver. Since being eliminated, the organization has parted ways with head coach Darvin Ham. And LeBron James has faced some criticism because of it. In fact, earlier this week on First Take, Kendrick Perkins shared this drastic career advice.
I hate to say it, but I believe this in my soul right now. I wish LeBron James will retire. The more LeBron James continue to play the game of basketball, the more it's going to hurt his legacy. And the more it's going to continue to hurt his GOAT argument. Because as long as he steps foot on that floor, every single season, it's going to be expectations of him of winning a championship. And when he don't do that, we're going to be looking at him and saying, well, what happened now?
This obviously got a lot of attention. What was your reaction to it, Allen Hunt?
I get what he's saying, because we don't like to see legends fade. We don't like to see that. There's a whole generation of fans that only know Larry Bird as a guy with a bad back and a beer belly who could only just shoot threes and really couldn't move. You watch him in the 80s, early 80s, a much different looking player. So I get that part of it, but LeBron James is still playing at an incredibly high level. He's still one of the elite players in the league. The only thing that I think, as far as the legacy conversation goes, will be, can he win another championship? Because that's all we ever hold, the standard we hold him to. We're used to seeing him year in and year out in the finals, or at least the conference finals. He's not there. So does he want to fade into fade to black, basically? Or does he try to do an Expendables? Does he try to find himself on another team while in this era of a younger teams that are built differently, put together one more super team and see if he can get one more championship? That's the compelling story about him. But he's certainly still playing at a high level, Legs.
I really disagree with Perk on this one. I actually think it can add to his legacy being this good and this deep into his career. It's never been done before. And by the way, this isn't a shot at Michael Jordan at all, but Michael Jordan, as he got deeper into his career in Washington, like, he completely changed even the way he played.
Nobody wanted Wizards Jordan.
He was a back you down turnaround jump shoot player, right? He was a complete, this LeBron James is the same player that he was 10 years ago. He plays the same style of game. There are still nights he looks like the best athlete on the court, pushing 40. So for me, it actually helps his legacy. I think the one thing that he's going to take some shots here as he goes is the number of guys that end up unemployed, right, around LeBron James because of the expectation level. But I actually respect tremendously what he's doing, and it's not going to hurt his legacy because he is locked in at number two.
Let me show that full screen here just to illustrate what Legs is talking about. Cindy, let's put it up. The average head coach under LeBron, and that's actually an interesting way of phrasing that. In theory, LeBron is under the head coach, but we all know that's ridiculous. The average coach has lasted about 2.5 years. If you see through the court, look at all of the different people who have coached LeBron James since he came into the league. Eric Spoelstra and Ty Lue account for 7 of LeBron's 21 seasons. He went to the finals in all 7 of those seasons and then left both of those coaches on his own. I mean, Wendy, you've been around him since he was in high school. Your thoughts?
Number one, his legacy is secure. Number two, he's making $50 million a year, which he can sign multiple years for. Number three, at the end, you always want to extend your career. And I just defer to Mr. Perkins, who actually, at the end of his career, played in the G League so he could try to get back into the NBA, which he was able to do. That's all.
I love that, Wendy, because I think retiring is a very personal conversation. And I think Perk's statement to me forgets the piece about competition, right? Like, that's also why you love to play the game and to be in a locker room. Double down, 25, 7, and 8, like, is not unproductive in today's league.
I just want to make sure I'm right on this. I mean, I voted him to an All-NBA team. He's going to make an All-NBA team, right? He's one of the 15 best players in the NBA right now.
He has our two votes. I don't know if he'll get enough.
But he's certainly going to get close.
Absolutely.
So he's one of the 15 best players in the NBA.
Greeny, if you
now
put him on several teams, they're championship contenders overnight because of him.
I personally believe that doing what he's doing now is adding to his legacy.
That's exactly how I feel, because it's unprecedented to play at this level and similar to the style of play that you did when you were in your mid-20s. That's the thing that's most incredible to me.
I co-sign your take, despite you belaboring the thing I got wrong earlier.
Boy, were you way off on the screen.
Tomorrow night, we'll have an NBA playoff game 2 doubleheader. We got the Cavs and Jason Tatum taking on the Celtics. Facing Jason Tatum and the Celtics at 7, followed by the Mavs and the Thunder. Countdown tips it off at 6:30 Eastern. Coming up, the league weighs in. Did they get it right? Or did Mr. Murray deserve much more than what was dished out? We will answer that question next.